Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behind the badge.
There's late word about the power plant in Ukraine reconnected now to the power grid there. Let's find out what's going on. Joseph Lindsley is the editor of Ukrainian Freedom News. Joseph, what are you hearing about that nuclear power plant and the power grid?
Yeah, Bob, good afternoon to you. And yeah, we're speaking of the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant, which is the largest nuclear power plant in Europe. The Russians have occupied it for months. And yesterday, for the first time in the plant's history, it was taken off the power grid. And it seems that the Russians are trying to disconnect it from Ukraine's power grid, which they achieved yesterday, and then connect it to their power grid to get energy for occupied territory of Crimea. The danger in disconnecting is that you lose the cooling capacity. And I think you have, if there was no electricity, when you disconnect it, there's a backup generator. And if that fails, then you have 90 minutes before meltdown begins, before we have another Chernobyl. And this plant is very safe. It's Ukrainians learned lessons from the Soviet times in Chernobyl. And it's run and staffed by Ukrainians that have been basically held hostage, since March. But today, just maybe about an hour ago, we got word that the plant is now once again reconnected to the Ukrainian power grid. So it's actually even though the Russians control it, it's supplying energy to Ukraine. And the International Atomic Energy Agency is—they're hoping to visit next week to inspect it, but it's proving quite difficult. And the Russians continue to shell from the vicinity of the plant. They are shelling across the river to Ukrainian held territory, including that city of Nikopol, which gets hit almost every single day.
I don't know if I understand the Putin's goal here concerning that nuclear power plant, because, on the one hand, I'm sure they're aware in Russia that all of Europe is concerned and would be up in arms if something catastrophic happened there. So what do you think the strategy is?
Yeah, well, and strangely, today it was revealed there were satellite images from Ukrainian Independence Day, August 24th, showing fires on the territory of the nuclear plant. So maybe they have been trying to prepare something. If you were to create some kind of meltdown situation, you can control the weather a little bit, as, for example, Beijing did during the Olympics. I think the Russians did that during Sochi. But it's a huge risk to determine which way the wind would blow any fallout. And so it seems to be complete madness and recklessness. We've seen this type of recklessness with the way Russians attack civilians. And I think sometimes the international organizations, say, like, oh, this is the line that can't be crossed. But the line was already crossed with the attack upon civilians in Bucha and Irpin, the barbaric scenes we saw from the very beginning of the war. I think Ukrainians would say, like, anyone that would do that, they're capable of anything. I think strategically, because I don't think, the Kremlin, it's so hard to know, Bob, but I don't think that they're stupid. And I think strategically they know that holding this nuclear plant and every once in a while having some incident near there, the world is at their beck and call. Mm-hmm. Russia's sort of in charge. And even this idea of the international nuclear agency going to inspect, they're going to inspect it on Russia's terms. It's almost acknowledging that Russia, yes, now controls this Ukrainian land. And I think that's sort of the game that Russia is playing.
In your reports, Joseph, you have put the spotlight on that wonderful Ukraine culture. And I don't know if you know this or not, but here in Chicago, the Kyiv City Ballet of Ukraine is coming to our town. First time ever. They're going to be at the Auditorium Theater in September. And when you have events like that here in the United States, it certainly helps keep the focus on what's happening there in Ukraine, doesn't it?
Yeah, and hopefully it shows people, the joy of the Ukrainian spirit, which, is universal. It's not easy times in America, I think, for many people as well. So if you can appreciate some good music and great art, if Ukrainians can do it in wartime, then surely, I think it's great that Ukrainians can share that spirit with people who are suffering in different ways around the world. There's a I was a friend was sharing with me the words of a Belarusian writer. She's half Ukrainian, half Belarusian. She won the Nobel Prize some years ago, and Svetlana Alexievich. And she wrote a lot about the Russian soul. She said Russian people are not getting ready for happiness. It's some kind of, and this is a big question. There's some sort of sickness in the culture, unhappiness, and you know part of the problem is maybe all the drinking. I mean, there's a lot of problems, but she said they're not getting ready for happiness. And yesterday I was talking with a friend who was telling me about his experience on that very strange Ukrainian Independence Day, August 24th, where the whole country was under the wail of alarms, you know, every few minutes. And he said in that this idea of being ready to be happy, you have to be happy today. And his son had never learned to ride two wheels on a bike. And he said he picked that day to do it. So while the air alarms are going off, my friend is showing his young son how to ride a bike. And this idea that, so whether you're going to a concert or, you know, you're investing in the future for your kids or even creating a business, as I've seen Ukrainians do in wartime, to get ready for happiness by being happy in the moment. And that's a very Ukrainian idea. And hopefully with that performance, they bring that spirit to Chicago.
I'm sure they will. Joseph, because of you, I'm very sleepy this morning because I went to the On Demand last night, watched that Showtime series, The Loudest Voice, again about the history of Fox News and Roger Ailes, because I know you're depicted there. Now, I made it through two parts. I didn't see you yet. When do you appear in that? I forgot how long that was. Russell Crowe is unbelievable in that.
Yeah, he really portrays Roger quite well. It's Hollywood. There's always some artistic license. So I was hiding in the Caucasus Mountains of Georgia when it came out. It was sort of difficult to see yourself on the screen in that way. I think I've appeared in the fourth episode.
Okay.
And I couldn't watch it. I couldn't finish it because it was too... So you have to tell me what you think because right. It was too weird for me.
I'll watch it over the weekend. I forgot how many parts there were to The Loudest Voice. It's really interesting, though. Joseph, I hope you have a peaceful weekend. We'll talk Monday.
Yeah, and Bob, I'll be traveling next week, so I'll tell you where I am when I get to those places. And right now, you know, in the corona times, you pack a mask for travel, and now we just have to pack a bulletproof vest and helmets. It's a different time, but I'll be speaking to you from across the country next week.
Safe travels.
And thank you, Bob.
Thank you.